sort of wanted to ask you too, what responsibilities you had at home, and when you were at your home, like what kind of things were you expected to do?
All you work. See, our culture, it's like kids, they don't put any kind of restraint on us. that's what I always, like I had some psychology classes, and they say like they in all that, you know, and I think we had that before, you know,
mm-hmm.
because they expect the child to kind of develop at his own level, you know, just
mm-hmm.
so they don't think of us as children, you know, we're individuals, and so we're expected to learn things through experience. So anything that the family did, we were part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And like with my mother and my dad, you know, when they start going into all this farming and stuff, you know, we used to have to help my mother, you know, with the garden. And I remember, like all the way at school, when I come home in the summertime, when she had this garden one time, they had potato bugs that were getting her potatoes. And so my father went into the trading post to get some kind of stuff that they brush on the leaves to kill them. Well, they didn't have any, and the guy at the trading post told him while he was expecting some in the next day that a mail truck comes in. So that night we were all down there. They give us all a little can, you know, with kerosene in it. So we had to go along each potato plant, knock all these potato bugs in there. It was tiresome. We were down there nearly all night doing that.
Mm.
Well, by the time we got the poison, we had gotten rid of the potato bugs, you know. And things like that, you know, we had to do. And as we got older, we used to ride horseback. My father used to send us out there to round up the street cattle and stuff like that.
Mm.
So we were always busy.
Did the girls and boys do the same kind
mm-hmm.
of work?
We used to get out there, and I remember sometimes that we like, you know, we have recreation, I guess. The boys used to get the little bull calves in the corral there, and they'd ride them, you know. So we thought, you know, we were just as smart as they were. So they told us, yeah, you know, you can take your turn. So my sister and I were always into something. So we thought, you know, they told us, pick out little calves and little rope it, and then you can ride it. So we picked out the smallest one. And what we didn't know was that the smallest calves, they jumped the highest. The big ones, you know, they're already big, so they don't go as high. The boys never forgot that. So, I don't know, we always had something to do. And then around the house, like, we'd help my mother cook and all that. And when I was raising my kids, I used to tell them, well, I used to do this, I used to do that. They don't believe it. Just
really?
Sometimes they think I'm exaggerating.
Well, what did the inside of the house look like?
Well, it was a frame house, and it had two bedrooms, and then we had a big living room, and the kitchen was was huge. My father made all of our furniture. He made big old table made out of wood and chairs and everything. And I always remember though when I was small, we used to all, as kids, we'd all have to sit on one end, you know, on the long bench. My father would sit at the head of the table and he would dish out the stuff to us. And the one thing I always remember, we boiled eggs, you know, in the morning for breakfast or something. He would take the egg and take a knife and slice it in half and then scoop it off. I used to sit there and I wanted to do it, you know, but I didn't dare ask him. But little things like that I remember, you know, that I wanted to do. And then like now, like fried chicken, I always, I like the wings and then the neck, you know. But I guess my mother thought, you know, they'd give us a drumstick or the breast because it had more meat on it, she'd give it to us too. Mm. And she would sit there eating the wing or the neck bone, and she'd be cutting it. So now that's the only part of chicken I'll eat, the wings and the neck.
So you always all sat together. Were your grandparents there at this
time? Yeah, they used to all sit at the table, and then I had all these, my dad had all his brothers that weren't married. And the ones that married, sometimes they would come and with their kids too, and oh, we'd have a
kid. Like, how many people would be at an average evening?
About 20.
Your mom's cooking for all these people.
Uh-huh. Oh, of course, like her sister-in-law, they would help her. You know? And my grandma used to do a lot of cooking too, but after a while she let them do all the cooking.
Did it take her a while to get used to, like, what were, was there a stove or just a wood-burning stove?
We had a wood-burning stove. But in the summer times, they did most of their cooking outdoors, like over an open pit. Because it would get so hot in the house. So they would cook out there. And then when they cooked outside like that, we'd all sit on the ground. They'd spread out a big old canvas, and we'd all sit around and eat on the ground. Especially when they'd butcher a cow or something, you know, and they'd have all this meat, you know, and they'd be cooking everything over that open fire.
How often did the whole family get together? It sounds like it was fairly often.
It was quite often. In the summer times, usually it seemed like they were always together.
For special occasions, or?
No, just nearly every day, I think. But see, in the winter times, it was like all those kids had to go away to school, and we'd be gone. So I don't know if they all still gathered like that, but I know when I was home in the summertime, they would always come.
Well, what kind of holidays did you celebrate? I know you didn't say you said not Christmas.
So. I don't think we celebrated any holidays. It was just more of
a ceremonial?
Just about, I think in July we have what they call the annual sun dance. And then,
Will you tell me something about that? What's that like?
Well, it's more or less like, it's sort of an annual pilgrimage because everybody gathers at a certain spot. And it was always up in the Black Hills of South Dakota. And it's like, everybody renews, they say it's renewing your life. Because they have a sweat lodge, you know, and it's, I guess it would be similar to the Catholics going to confession, and, you know.
Did everyone participate in it? No one was involved?
Mm-hmm.
What was involved in it? Fasting or?
Well, the children were more or less at a certain age who were expected to do certain things. But the grown-ups, it was fasting, and a lot of them would go into like the young boys at a certain age who were expected to go on these, like a vision quest, they call it, and they go up into the mountains or something by themselves.
Was this a puberty that they would do with the boys?
The girls had a similar ceremony when you start having your menstrual period.
Mm-hmm. What was
and,
the ceremony like?
Well, it's, you were put in a little teepee by yourself, and you had to stay in there, and you had to fast, and then they had a couple of ladies, maybe they would be your mother's sisters or something, would come in there, and it's more like, unless they would tell you, like, the facts of life or something.
So did you know ahead of time that this was going to happen to you when you started menstruation?
Yeah. We were told all this, so we knew all this ever since we was about, you know, old enough to understand. So we sort of expected it, you know.
So what were you feeling about then? You weren't?
It wasn't anything like like it wasn't a mystery. It was something that I always felt that it was something that I was supposed to do. It was part of my life. So you just go through it without, you know, thinking about it. And, well, in those days they used to tell us that that's what we were, women were, and that comes in with this sexism stuff, that we were to become mothers and be a wife, you know. But then, I don't know, it's kind of hard to explain because we had the choice. And I was talking to that Marion that's in that class, that elderly woman.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about women's lives and everything, and I said, you know, I've never really thought about it because I didn't think I was discriminated against because of that, you know. Because I've always felt that even after I was married and had my children, I went to work, you know, and I decided I didn't want to work, so I went home and stayed with my kids again. But I had a feeling that I had a choice. So I don't really think that I was, you know, put down.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, I think the men are more discriminated against because they don't have a choice.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you were in going through the puberty rites, what would the boys be doing? Like on this vision quest, on the vision quest.
Well, they were supposed to, it's like their turn. It's like finding your identity or what they were going to be in life, you know. Well, in the old days, it was always they were going to become a big warrior and all that. But
when you were growing up, that's what they used to.
Mm-hmm. And they had to, but the thing with it, you see, they taught them a lot about having respect for themselves and respect for women. That was the one thing. And like I've always said, you know, like they didn't stress sex a lot, and so we never think about, like I hardly ever heard of any, you know, rape or nothing like that.
Mm-hmm.
Or incest or a man fooling around with somebody else's wife or something like that, you know. It's only after the government put them on a reservation, mm-hmm. and they start going away to school, coming back, then we start having those kind of problems. So they were taught, you know, always to have respect. And they like to say, yeah, you respect your mother. The women are going to be mothers, so you have to respect mm-hmm. them. And you respect your sister, so you respect this girl over here. She is somebody's sister and stuff mm-hmm. like that.
And what were the women telling you?
Oh, they were always telling me that, well, one of the biggest things they told me is to always respect my elders. And by this, if you respect your elders, you're going to respect authority too, but they didn't come out and say
mm-hmm.
that. What kind of authority? So, I guess more or less that way, I've always went to these schools. No matter how bad I was treated, you know, that person was older than I was, I still mm-hmm. respected them. So they always thought, oh, Christina's a very nice girl, you know. Sometimes I thought if they only knew what was in my mind. And that's about the only ceremony that we had to go through. And then afterwards, they have different ceremonies, like that ceremony they had for my uncle when he came back from the service. And see, one time my mother was sick, they had a special ceremony for her.
What did they do?
Well, I wasn't there at the time because that's when I was away to school and they said she got real sick. And my father tried to, my sister and I were away to school, and mm-hmm. he'd asked the government up there if they could let us come home if they refused. So I don't know exactly what kind of a ceremony mm-hmm. she had to go through. Afterwards, I heard she was okay, so I guess.
Would the medicine woman come in or mm-hmm. something like that?
Because my grandmother was the one that was supposed to do her healing arts or something.
Mm-hmm. What other annual things can you remember as a younger child, annual ceremonies that?
Oh, like in the fall, they have I guess that's where the pilgrims got Thanksgiving from. But it wasn't really like you read about. It's more or less they thank the Great Spirit for the wonderful summer harvest or the buffalo are plentiful mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And they have a ceremony then. It's like thanking the Great Spirit. And then another ceremony they have is like somebody dies in the family, and then you're supposed to go in mourning for a whole year. And then you come back to that day that person died, and it's like a remembrance or something. You have a ceremony, and that's where, I don't know if you've ever heard of a giveaway, they call it ceremony. They give away a lot of presents to different mm-hmm. people. It's like saying, you know, that you value life more than you value material things.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been to several of those.
Well, what were you taught as a child about life after death or what death was?
I was always taught that we don't really die, that we come back again. Like my grandma always told me that I was here before, and I believed it because like I was born with my ears pierced already, and she said that I must have been a real old lady in them before, because she said I used to remember different things that nobody ever thought about or had told me, but I would come up with something, you know. And different parts of the country, you know, I would talk about. I had never been, you know. And so she told me this, you know. So she says, when you die, or she doesn't say when you die, you just go to sleep. Because you're tired and you have to rest. But she said, you come back again. But she said, you may not come back the same person, you might be somebody else. So when a person dies, we don't really think of them as they're just going away for a while and they'll come back again. And that's our philosophy. It's like going around in a circle and then you just come back again. And then birth, and then adult, and then there's old age, and then they say death, but they don't really say death, but they're just going away.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that's why when somebody dies, I don't really take it, like I don't go mourning and all that.
I like that concept.
Because, I don't know, it seems that way, it's all along, if somebody dies in our family, it seems like somebody else there's a baby born. And it's kind of, like my husband passed away, and one of my daughters had a little boy. So she named him after her dad, but it's kind of...
How long were you at the government school? Did you go through to high school?
Yeah, I went through to high school. I guess that's the only kind of school that.
Was high school any different than the lower grade schools?
Only the studies. But they were the same. They were these government boarding schools.
What was the social life like?
Oh, they tried to have dances and they used to have dances in the auditorium. And sometimes they'd have picnics. And I don't think they had too many. Well, they didn't have TV, and they weren't that. When radio came off, they had one, they put one in the lobby we could go listen to. And, well, when I was in high school, see, I went to, down to Lawrence, Kansas. And they used to let us on Saturdays go downtown to the movies.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a sign in, sign out and sign in. So I guess we did have a little bit more freedom, you know, there. But
you still had to, what else did you have to sign in and out for?
Oh, like if you go from one dormitory to another building, you have to have a pass. You know, because they had to know where you were all the time.
And they gave you all your supplies? Like when you were having menstruation, they would give you everything you needed?
Oh, yeah, food kicks. I'll never forget one crazy matron. She was a southerner from Virginia or something. Her name was Miss Jones. I don't know where she got the right idea that we all needed girdles. So she requisitioned the government for it. And they were pink, you know, and they laced up the back, you know. And I thought, why do you have to wear these things for? Because in those days I used to be real, you know, skinny. And I think mine was too big, but she just had this weird idea that we had to learn to wear girdles.
How old were you when she did this?
I was about 12. And I wasn't even formed yet. I didn't even have a class and everything.
Were you wearing a uniform, a school uniform?
Yeah, we used to have to wear, we used to call them hickory dresses, I don't know what they, but they were made out of denim. And they were just made, they were sewing, and we had our own sewing room and everything there. So they would cut them out like cut out a doll dress.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't sew sleeves, and you just cut it like that. And it came straight down, and then the neck was just cut out.
Stylish.
Yeah, they were just like a muumuu or something, straight down. Mm-hmm. And that's what we wore to work in. And for classes, our dresses were a little bit more fancy. At least they had a collar on them.
Were they made out of the denim too?
No, they were made out of cotton, and they came in colors, you know.
Could you pick the color you wanted, or did they just give them to you?
But we used to have to wear black stockings and high-top shoes, you know, black high-top shoes that laced all the way halfway up our calf, you know. And up there now, when I was up in North Dakota, since it was cold, we had to wear these long johns under everything else. So on top of the long johns we used to have, because I was just a little girl, and we wore these, we used to call them bloomers. They were made out of denim. And they were the kind that, they were like a little under, it was one piece, and they had elastic around the legs here. And the back had this drop suit, and then the buttons up the back. And we wore those over these long johns. So it seemed like we were always hungry. So we'd go to the dining room, and it seemed like we never got enough to eat. So we would sneak sandwiches. So after a while, you know, they put a stop to it, and they said, you can't be bringing food out of the dining room. You have to eat it right there. So we got this right idea, you know, we knew how to sneak them out. So we'd stuff them at the bloomer lace here. We'd come walking out of there.
Bigger than me.
Yeah. We had apples and oranges and everything in there.
Oh, no.
I guess there was some time just laugh about it.
Well, looking back, it's always easier.
But when I was first at one of the schools, I couldn't get used to it. Especially, I had never learned to lace shoes, you know. Oh, it was terrible. And we used to have to wash our clothes, you know, because they put a tag on all of our clothes with our name in the back here. So they would tell us, like these dresses we wore to work around in, and we get ready for school, we had to put on our school dresses. They had hooks all along in the, they call it playroom. We had to hang our dresses up even on these hooks. So this one time I was in a hurry, so I went and washed up and everything, you know, and I took off for school. I forgot to hang my hickory dress up. I came back from school and I couldn't find it, and I thought, oh my goodness. So I guess, you know, all the ones that they leave their clothes there, they pick them up, you know. So she told me, she says, well, that's just too bad. She said, you can't find your dress. And she said, you can't keep your school dress on, so take it off. So, it was embarrassing. I had to get in line with just my underwear, you know. Mm-hmm. And they made me go to the dining room like that. And I cried, you know. But they used to do things like that, and they really, you know, put you through a lot like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But they seem to enjoy doing it, though.
Mm-hmm. What kind of punishment would they use when you were older?
Oh, when we were older, it was more or less cleaning up. Like they'd make us get down on our hands and knees on the floor, because they had wooden, these hardwood floors.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd make us scrub those floors till they were white. And then we'd have to wax and polish them. And we didn't use any, you know, the modern equipment. We had we used to have to put big old rags on our feet and just go back and forth to polish it. And all my sisters went through the whole bit. My older brother, he used to run away so much that they finally gave up on him.
Did he make him go back to school?
Oh, they threatened him. They threatened they were going to send him to reform school. And he hid out, you know. And my grandparents knew about it. I think they helped hide him. So finally, they just gave up on him. And of course, he didn't finish high school or anything. I think he went to the ninth grade.
Mm-hmm. Were all your sisters with you in the same school, or were you all together?
No, we were all separated. They spent one here and one there. Because they didn't want you to. You know what it was, that they just wanted to break up families.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't think that if they kept the family together, that, well, there's a unity there, mm-hmm. that they're going to rebel.
Right. Yeah.
So they figured if they broke you all up, and then they'd have a better chance of making you do what they wanted. What they call assimilating into society. Mm-hmm. I don't know, for a long time there, my ideas were so warped, I don't know what's about coming or going. And I guess for a while I used to have fantasies about someday I'm going to be this and that. See, I remember I was in high school, I used to like art, you know. We had an art teacher there. And she thought I was really good at art, you know. So I used to talk to her, and she was very nice. So she used to have all these fashion magazines, and I'd be looking at them. So she found out that I was really good at drafting patterns and making, you know, I'd see something in a magazine and I could make up the pattern and make it up, you know. So she told me, she said, you know, she said, you would be good in fashion designing. And I got to thinking, you know, now why would I want to be a fashion designer? Then she's always telling me about all these big, like Schiaparelli and all these people that were fashion designers. And so I got the right idea that I could be up there too. So for a while there, I was really into that. Then one time I just thought to myself, what am I doing this for, you know? I don't belong here, so I just forgot it all again, you know.
Why did you start that way?
Well, in the first place, well, it's like living two lives, I guess, in two different worlds. See what happened was I was down in Kansas City and everything. I had forgotten about the reservation. I went home and I seen how bad it was on the reservation. Everybody just seemed to be so depressed. And everything was just, you know, people were just barely having enough to eat from day to day. And things were just... And I got to thinking, you know, why do I have to go out there in that society? You know, with all my education, I can come back here and help my people. So that's when I got to thinking, fashion designing, what good is that going to do me on a reservation? So that's when I kind of just forgot about it. But see, that's like trying to live in two different cultures. And you can't use what you learned over here or there. You know?
How did the people on the reservation feel about you?
Oh, for a long time there, I think they sort of resented me. Well, I used to hear them say I was trying to be like the white people. And they would laugh at some of the things. But after a while, I got used to that. And then they found out that when I came back there, I was myself again. So they forgot that. But for a while there, it was kind of like the older people just kind of ignored me. And, oh, that used to hurt me because I was always around my grandparents. And it didn't seem the same, you know. They acted like they didn't want to talk to me.
That made me hard.
But the thing of it was, they thought that I had forgotten my language and that I wouldn't understand them. But once they found out that I still spoke the language and I still could, you know, talk to them, it kind of opened up again, you know. It's hard. And I think nowadays that's what's happening, because a lot of these kids, a lot of them are getting so they can't cope with it. So they come back out into this society and they've learned to drink. They've learned to take drugs. So it seems like it's getting worse instead of getting better. At least in my time, we did have a chance. That's why I guess I was thinking of all this, because I still go back to reservation and nobody seems to know where we're headed. And I thought, well, if I can help some way, I'm going to help it. Right now, sometimes I have my thoughts now. I told my daughter, sometimes I think about it and I think, what am I doing going to college? And nobody's making me go, you know. And I told her, for 2 cents I quit right now. And she says, well, I think I have 2 pennies.
So your ambition, sort of, when you were in high school, were to go back to the reservation.
And yes, that's what I had thought about, you know. But then what they taught me was, I don't think any of it I could have used back then. Like, I went to business school, too, 1 year. And I was taught all these typing and all that. But how could I use that back to the reservation?
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that I did lack was, I went to 2 years of college right after I finished high school. I went to South Dakota State, and then I went to Kansas University. I took home economics though. And then they did teach in high school there, home economics at the boarding school there. But the funny part about that was, we were taught to cook on all these fancy stoves, electric and the latest gas stoves. You go back to reservation, we didn't have that kind of stove, you know, so it's kind of a letdown, because here, you know, I just enjoyed, you know, baking pies and everything, but you go back there and this old wood stove, we don't know how to adjust the temperature. And the first couple of times, I think my pies burned.
So you're trained to make it in the wife culture, though.
Yeah, but not to go back there. And the boys, but the thing about that, too, was that they didn't teach us how to work as a professional, you know, like, it was more or less menial jobs.
Mm-hmm.
The boys were taught to be welders. I think we had more Indian welders than and carpentry and bricklayers.
Yeah. And what were the women being taught?
Home office. And that's another thing with that too, because I tried for a scholarship to go to college when I graduated from high school. Well, this teacher that was telling me about my artistic talent, she kept telling me I should go to art school. So I went up there and told him that if I got a scholarship, I wanted to major in art. They told me, no, we don't give a scholarship for art. The only scholarships we got is for business, home economics and teaching and nursing. So I thought, well, like I told you, I was a nurse in the service, but somehow or other, that's a long story too, because I got kind of pushed into that. I never had any nurses training.
Mm-hmm.
At the school there, see, they had their own hospital. It was a little hospital. If they got sick, they went there, and they had a government doctor. So they didn't have any professional nurses.
This is at the college you went to?
No, this government school when I was in high school.
Oh, this is still in high school.
Uh-huh. So they used us kids, the girls. We had to, they call it a detail. So we used to have to go over there and work in the hospital as a nurse. And then one summer I went home, went to the government hospitals up in Montana. They needed nurses so bad. And they couldn't get anybody out there. So they asked some of the Indian girls, you know, somebody told me, oh, you want a job up there? And I said, yeah, what job is a job? So I went up there and worked as a nurse. And believe me, I think I did just as much as an RN would do, because I helped the doctor with surgery and everything. So I never had any professional nursing. Then when I went to service, they found out I had all this experience. And they needed nurses, so they put me in a medical corps.
Mm.
So that's how
it happened.
Yeah.
Well, when you got out of boarding school, where did you live then?
Oh, that was another thing, too, because by then I had found out that going back and living on a reservation was just too much. Cause I had gotten used to the easy life, I guess you might say, all the electricity and all that, you know, modern plumbing and all. So the dean of women there, she told me if I wanted to, they would get me a job through the summer. So I said, yeah. So I worked in a summer resort up in Benton Harbor, Michigan. And then I worked up at Sylvan Lake in South Dakota. Then I worked up at the Chalet up in Glacier National Park up in Montana.
What kind of jobs were you doing?
Like a waitress.
How are you doing?
Oh, that's another thing. They had a class there for to be a waitress. I thought I was a real wonderful waitress.
So where did you stay up at these places?
Oh, they had places for us to stay. In fact, there's one in Benton Harbor. This guy, because they had a lot of wealthy people that came in. And he said that he used to hire girls from Milwaukee, I guess. He said he was so disappointed with them. So the next summer he thought, well, I'll hire these farm girls. And he said, they're big and strong. He said, they're like these Swedish girls, you know, that came. And he says, it took me so long to try to teach them how to, you know. So he said he was disgusted. And somebody told him, you know, we could get some good waitresses at one of those government boarding schools. So that's when he got in touch with the Haskell Institute at the school. So our matron, her name was Mrs. Steelman, and the thing about it was she was going to send so many girls up there. So you had to sign up if you were interested. Well, they sort of screened you. She wasn't going to send you up there if you had a bad record, you know.
Mm-hmm.
She just wanted to send her the best girls so they would put on a good front.
Mm-hmm.
So the next year, the guy, he was so pleased with us. He says, oh, they were wonderful. So he didn't have any trouble with us. But see, before we went up there, we were told, we don't want you associating with the customers. If any of them ask you for a date, you turn them down, tell them you can't. And we don't want you going on at any wild parties or going out on your own. We all have to stay together and we have to do everything.
Did you?
Yeah, we did because, you know, it was a job and
mm-hmm.
it was the first time we did get paid pretty good, you know. And she was always saying, you have to think about the school and the reputation. So we were like little wooden soldiers. We did everything the correct way. So the next year he applied for some more again. So that way they always have, that was another source of their summer jobs.
This was during high school, right?
Yeah.
What did you do then after high school and the night before college?
I was working in Kansas City because by then I knew how to type and everything. Well, I worked for the government. Then I went to college for the 2 years, and that's when the war broke out. And I was back down in Kansas and went to KU. When the war broke out, and everybody seemed to be going into something but me, I was going to school. I got kind of bored, you know. All my friends, you know, everybody would write me a letter or something. Oh, we're going out to the coast, we're working in a defense plant, and a lot of my girlfriends, you know. Oh, we're making a lot of money, you know. So I thought, oh, school can wait, you know, why don't I just quit and get a job with them? But I didn't have any idea what I'd do, you know. So I was going home because they sent me up to Chicago, and they had at the merchandise mart there, they have BIA headquarters there.
Mm-hmm.
And